The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning, you may be seated. First case on our calendar is 04-448 and 1765, State Exrail Plain Dealer and State Exrail Vindicator Printing Company versus the City of Cleveland and the City of Youngstown. Mr. Marburger.
We may ask to use a visual aid, which the opposing counsel has
counsel
not objected to.
Approved.
May we
yes.
do that?
Okay.
May it please the court, I'm David Marburger. I intend to argue for 10 minutes on behalf of Relator the Plain Dealer. And Mr. Fred Geddes, my co-counsel, intends to argue 5 minutes for the Vindicator and to have rebuttal of 5 minutes if that is consistent with what we're allowed to do.
That's fine. You can use your time however you like, Mr. Marburger.
Thank you. I think I speak for all the counsel here on both sides of the table in expressing gratitude to the court for hearing oral argument in this case. I think it's a remarkable honor to be able to argue in this fantastic facility, and we thank you. Now, did you know that Ohio is the only state in the Union that has a law that purports to deny citizens the right to obtain records of the identities of police officers? No other state in the Union has a law that purports to do that. When a man assumes a position of public trust, he should consider himself public property. Thomas Jefferson said that in 1807, 200 years ago. And one of the questions that this case raises—
Are you arguing that we should declare it unconstitutional because we're the only state with such a statute?
We are arguing that we're not saying that that's the reason you should declare it unconstitutional, but a literal reading of this statute, we argue, raises constitutional issues. The Plain Dealer argues that it raises sufficient enough constitutional issues to demand a non-literal interpretation. The Vindicator takes that one step further and says that, in fact, a literal interpretation would violate the Constitution, although the court need not decide that decide the constitutionality of the provision by deciding what the provision really applies to. And we are—
That's what I was going to ask is, we could decide this case simply on the language of the exception.
Yes.
And the wording in no way mentions photos. And the police have two photos, one of a police officer in uniform, one not in a uniform. And it would appear that if the ordinary picture was given, that would not violate that exception. Is that true, in your opinion? Or are you really asking for the photo of the officer in uniform?
Well, we are asking for the photos of officers who were assigned to uniformed units. They are all uniformed patrol officers.
Now, would you be satisfied, what my question really is, would you be satisfied with a photo of the person not in uniform? Would that satisfy your request?
No.
No. Okay. Thank you.
We are keenly aware that perhaps this court, more than most, takes a certain degree of pride in interpreting statutory provisions literally as written. But we suggest to the court that if one were to interpret this statutory provision literally as written, and all other Ohio law that address the same topic literally as written, a great deal of Ohio law will not make sense. And I promise you, that at the end of this oral argument, when everyone is done, every lawyer in the room, and probably members of the bench, are going to be proposing or advocating, either tacitly or overtly, some non-literal interpretation of the statutory provision at issue here.
Isn't that difficult for us to begin, not begin, I guess, but to engage in an assessment of a statute on the basis of whether we think the General Assembly intended a literal application or a non-literal application? Doesn't that give us, as judges, awfully broad authority if we assume it to sort of decide what the General Assembly intended when the words seem to be fairly clear?
Well, the court, in fact, this court has decided that not to interpret literally unambiguous statutory provisions as written when the court exercises its affirmative duty to reconcile that reading of a statute with other statutes that address the same topic.
But when we put the arguments of the city against your arguments, there is some rationality for the words in the statute, is there not? There's some reason that the General Assembly wanted to protect the identity of police officers in today's world. Would you disagree with that?
I would disagree with that in the context of all of Ohio law. There's a great deal of irrationality in the notion that Ohio law requires officers to wear nameplates, requires them to wear identifying badge numbers, requires them to wear uniforms with which we can easily match a likeness with a police officer, requires them to present their credentials, including photo IDs, when demanded by citizens, requires them to give their names when demanded by citizens,
well,
even
city,
bad citizens.
The city, as you know, argues, well, that's all in the pursuit of their duties. And they need to identify themselves as someone if they're going to ask someone for information or arrest someone or detain someone. Is that not different? I mean, the city argues, of course, that's different than putting their photo in a newspaper or whatever media that then enables people who have no need to know the officer's identity other than whatever they're going to use it for.
Is it different? We're talking about, in order to get this statutory exclusion to apply to a photograph, we have to construe it as applying not just to photos, but it doesn't touch the photo, except for the fact that the photo is a record that identifies a police officer. If we're going to construe this provision literally so that it can apply to a photo, then it necessarily applies to every other record that identifies a police officer. There's no principled way to say that this provision can be applied literally and applies to photos in the personnel file and not to every other record in the personnel file that identifies the police officer, including traffic citations signed by an officer, arrest warrants signed by an officer, jail logs that list the name of the arresting officer, police disciplinary records that show who was promoted and who was demoted and who was...
Counsel, how do we deal... You're arguing they have to show their badge, et cetera. How do you deal with the undercover officer? Do we carve out an exception, or do you demand the undercover officer's pictures as well as part of your position?
We do not demand the undercover officer's pictures as well as part of our position.
Then what justification or rationale do we have under your theory for prohibiting the disclosure of those to you? Or
well,
there's an officer that's now on duty, but they want to eventually put him undercover, and we've already given the picture to you. How does it affect those sort of issues that I assume the General Assembly can look at and balance?
There are two legal situations that we can address with that. One is that given the overall legislative scheme, it becomes nonsensical to say that the citizen cannot go in and verify the identity of a uniformed police officer, because by virtue of all the Ohio laws, uniformed police officers are required in various ways to disclose their identities, and presumably that's to benefit us, that it's good for us as the citizens to know who the uniformed police officers are to make them accountable.
Well,
so one argument would be, I'm sorry.
My question is not that. My question is how, if you argue we should take this non-literal interpretation, how do you argue then that we have the right, since you say we do not have to include undercover, how do we have the right under that argument to create some sort of exception to this photo ID?
Well, the way it is done is the way it could have been done, a similar method as other cases that have looked at the literal interpretation of statutory provisions, and that is simply to say, when applied to this class of police officers, the provision at issue can't be reconciled if it's addressed literally, construed literally, with all the rest of Ohio law that gives citizens access to the identities of police officers. So it isn't that you're carving out an exception for undercover. What you're doing is saying it is absurd or irrational or irreconcilable to take the statutory provision at issue and apply it to records that identify officers who are assigned to uniformed units.
If we agree with your position, is there any restriction on use by the media of these photographs? Any ethics from the standpoint of a journalist, or is this subject to the discretion of an editor or a reporter for use?
Well, it is subject to the editor and to the editor's discretion, as is any public information if this is determined to be public information. The editors are perfectly free to photograph the police officers themselves if they have the chance to do it. There's no law that says they can't do that. And in fact, there's no law that says that the bad guys can't do that. In this instance, we cannot say, on the one hand, that every personnel record of a police officer is open except those listed in some part A of this exemption, and at the same time say that every record that identifies a police officer is unavailable to the public and not open, because the quintessential purpose of a personnel record is to identify the police officer. They have no other purpose. Personnel records, by definition, identify police officers. If we were to interpret this statutory provision literally as written, it doesn't say the identities of police officers are unavailable. It says any record that identifies somebody as a police officer is unavailable. Well, then what does subpart A tell us? Subpart A says the entirety of a personnel record is open except those specific items that the General Assembly has precisely described as excluding. And absent from that list is photos or the identities of police officers, thereby causing any reader to believe that if the record in the personnel file does not have the information that's specifically embargoed in subpart A, that everything else is available, including what has customarily been present in personnel files, photographs.
Well, then we come back to Justice Pfeiffer's question. You want us to declare subpart B unconstitutional.
Well, that's an option. We don't think you have to go that far. That's an option. I think it is unconstitutional if we apply it literally to bar citizens, to deny citizens the right to verify the identities of uniformed police officers. Perhaps to all police officers, but certainly to the identities of uniformed police officers. But you don't have to go that far.
Counsel, how is the public barred from verifying that a man or a woman is in fact a police officer? We all agree that upon request, a police officer on the street shows identification, badge, uniform, all the indicia of being a police officer for the purposes of exerting authority and having the appropriate response from the citizen, and then the protection of the citizen, knowing that they are dealing with a legitimate officer of law, correct?
When they're face to face, that will work.
Okay. And that is done in the line of duty. What you're proposing, disclosure of identifying information vis-a-vis a photograph, has nothing to do with their line of duty activities.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure why that would be so. It would seem to me that if I, the reason that the city of Youngstown, for example, has a mug book with everybody's identity, everybody's photo in it who's on the police force, is to assist citizens in trying to identify a police officer after he has met the police officer, to try to figure out which one is the person being complained about. Now, if I may, I'd like to cede the rest of my time to Mr. Gittes.
Thank you, Mr. Marburger. Mr. Gittes.
Thank you. If it please the court, very briefly, because I would like to reserve some rebuttal time. Justice O'Connor, the answer to your question is police officers don't always wear tags. What if they're off duty? And they use, because they're still, as you know, still acting as police officers when a situation arises even off duty. Under that theory, no witness would ever be shown a mug shot to identify somebody they saw in a criminal encounter. Justice Stratton,
except
the answer you-
Except, Counselor, if they are intervening when they're off duty in an incident and there's a need for verification, I venture to say that police officers carry identification with them to show their badge, their identification, and that is, in essence, a line of duty activity. And if a citizen comes to the police station for verification, it's readily available.
Your Honor, we can't sit here and discuss this case if you're going to assume that in every situation, an officer acts in good faith. I've been doing civil rights cases for my entire career. This court is aware of many decisions where officers have been found to engage in illegal conduct, either criminal or civil. The purpose, the whole issue here, is the ability of a citizen, and an officer in some cases, to be able to find out whether another officer has engaged in misconduct. Photos serve a very important public purpose in allowing the public to recognize that someone was somewhere, did something, maybe an officer was engaged in some improper conduct, and they would not know but for the availability of a picture in a newspaper. Now, as to the undercover officer issue, Your Honor, this case, if this were a 14th Amendment case, which it is not, this is not a Colstrom case, this is not a case under Keller versus Cox, because we aren't asking for undercover officers, but if we were, then we get into the issue of whether the release of a photograph would actually endanger the officer. On this record, this court knows there is not one iota of evidence that has been presented by the respondents from officers who spanned collectively hundreds of years in law enforcement, tens of thousands of arrests and searches, of an incident, a single incident where an officer was threatened, injured, or killed because of a picture in a newspaper.
Do you disagree then with your co-counsel? Do you think that our order, if we agree with you, should include undercover officers and you should be permitted to print those?
No, this case doesn't present that, Your Honor.
If we write a rule saying you can get all of their photographs, do we not even mention the undercover, or do we carve out an exception?
No, Your Honor, this court does what it routinely does. It reserves the question of constitutional issues. You ask, what's the limit? You know, well, if we say this allows photographs, what's the limit? The limit is the 14th Amendment to the United States, as this court said in Keller versus Cox, and as the Sixth Circuit said in Colstrom. There it indicated where there's real evidence of life-threatening situations, which I submit, that case dealt with undercover officers and the distribution of personal information about undercover officers. When presented with that, this court has a reason to consider limiting the right of the public, which is a time-honored tradition by statute, ordinance, and practice here.
So how do you propose we would write this rule in your favor?
Your Honor, I believe this is a simple case, and here I'll tell you why. This court has a duty, the General Assembly in 1.51 and 1.52, and this court in Hughes said, we have an affirmative duty to reconcile, harmonize, specific and general statutes and statutes that appear to be in conflict. As Mr. Marburger said, if you apply a little interpretation to Section B, all police records, because, Mr. Chief Justice, all these records are created in connection with the business of being police, whether it's an IAB investigation, personnel files, et cetera, it's all police work. It makes meaningless every statute, ordinance, and practice, and all the other exemptions to the Public Records Act, which are specific. The reasonable way to harmonize this is what we have proposed in the Vindicator brief, and that is that B simply extends the protection to personal information, spouse information, credit cards, beneficiaries, et cetera, in A from just personnel records to all police records. It makes sense. It harmonizes. It does what this court said in Hughes, we must do unless it's hopeless. Otherwise, it's the only time you strike it. This is not a question about ambiguity. It's about reconciling. Lastly, and I'll finish because I'd like to reserve just a minute or two, you know, we have 60 years of evidence in this case, wars, wars on crimes, crack epidemics, terrorism, the list goes on. Not one piece of evidence that an officer was hurt because of a photograph in a newspaper or a video. In addition, the conduct of the respondents themselves prove that this makes no sense, their argument. The Youngstown Police Department puts out an annual report every year with pictures of their new police officers, their promoted officers, and their retiring officers. Right now, as Officer Kane testified, gang members can go to a precinct and photograph every officer coming out. He said they engage in counter-surveillance. They aren't prohibited from doing it, but you're going to prevent citizens who are honest and not criminals from getting a photo of an officer who may have engaged in misconduct or hurt them. That is not a sensible interpretation, and I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
You've used your time, but I'll give you a little time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Geddes. Mr. Anassas. The red light will alight when you've used 15 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. I too believe that this is an easy case, and I think it's an easy case because all this court needs to do is to apply the law as written by the General Assembly. I've read all the briefs, I've read all the documents filed in this case, I've listened to the arguments, and I really have yet to hear anyone argue that the statutory language that exempts documents that identify, or records that identify a peace officer's or a person's occupation as a peace officer, I've yet to hear anybody really say that that phrase is ambiguous and in need of any construction that deviates from the plain language of the statute as written by the General Assembly.
Well, counsel, I'm wondering, here these police officers in the case of Cleveland were being honored by the Rotary Club, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
But what if they weren't being honored? What if they had caused terrible trouble in violation of several laws or potentially in violation of, say, civil rights laws? There's a big, as in the case in cases in Cincinnati recently, big issue of whether or not in the carrying out of their duties, they crossed the line and were violating the civil rights of citizens. What is or is not available to the public in that case?
Well, I think you still have to make the distinction between what's available in a public records context and what's available otherwise, because the public records, the exemption that removes the identification from public records law does not
say these same officers made certain arrests that are controversial in a civil rights circumstance. They haven't been charged with a violation of any law yet, but it's front page news.
They file a complaint with the police review board and find out the identities that way, or they sue the city and name the aliases or the other people later. I mean, it happens all the time that the city gets sued with John Doe's as the police officers and they get named later through discovery. This police officer identity exemption would not function in a civil lawsuit to protect information that's otherwise discovered.
So something that's front page news that involves alleged misconduct by police officers, the newspaper or any other citizen that wants to learn who's involved has to file a civil lawsuit in order to discover even the identity, even the name?
Or to file a complaint. I mean, that's the way the law is written. I understand that it sounds a little odd, but I think that what the General Assembly has done is to balance all of the equities in the situation and has decided that the question that you are posing, yes, it's probably not the greatest outcome in the world in terms of what we all anticipate nowadays as far as availability of information, but when you balance that against all the reasons why this information should not be given out through a public records request. The choice has been made by the people who make the policy decisions.
But doesn't the language of subsection B subsume all the parts of A?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. I think you have to read them together. As I tried to lay out in my brief, I think that subsection B really completes what subsection A lays out.
A is a specific listing of Social Security numbers and specific information. B is a general, all-encompassing kind of descriptive definition of all records.
I think that the way the statute is written, that what ultimately you would have if someone asked for a person, if someone asks for a personnel file of a police, let's say they get, you know, they're, oh, I got it. Personnel file that was produced today would have all the information redacted from it that subsection A has to take out. Like, the press gets wind that an officer was involved in, like, for example, they do public records requests to see how the city spends its money on police officers getting car washes done or overtime records or something like that. They discover that certain police officers are abusing privileges. And they do it not by knowing the officer's name, but they've got the officer's badge number, and you can trace this all down and say, this officer here, who cares what his name is, because as between me and you, when we see a officer's name in the paper, what difference does it make that it's Joe Schmo versus this officer? Because it's the city who's paying, it's the taxpayers' dollars that are at stake, and it's the taxpayers who are spending the money improperly. But anyway, they do the request. They could still get the police officer's or the person's personnel record. It would have his name redacted. And yes, as authorized by subsection A, it would have all that all that personal family information redacted from it also, because you have to do both. If you do the one but not the other, then you can circle back and find the other one out. If you have the names of the spouses or bank accounts or what have you, then you can figure out the name of the officer. And if you have the name of the officer, you can figure out all the information that's protected, or a great deal of it, just through normal public records requests from documents that are online nowadays. I mean,
Counselor, is this a big city thing?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question, Your Honor.
Well, I mean, I live in a place where everybody knows the police officers, and a lot of citizens in this state live in places like that. I would venture in some of the suburbs in Cuyahoga County. Who is a police officer is well known by everybody in town. Probably have some one police officer towns.
I don't know if it is or not, Your Honor, but I can truthfully tell you that the city of Cleveland has a residency requirement, and the neighborhood that I live in has, I know, a number of police officers living in it. I know of a couple of guys right down the street from me. And I can tell you just from the difference between those two, one fellow doesn't really care if he's identified as a police officer. Sometimes he comes out of the house with his uniform on. Sometimes it's his own car parked in front of his house for one reason or another. The other guy, I have never seen him in a uniform because he wants to protect his identity from all of us knowing that he's a police officer for one reason or another. So whether it's a big city thing or a little city thing, I think it does address a need that our police officers, uniformed or not, address, feel on a daily basis as far as protecting their own personal safety and security.
Let's take the four officers in the Cleveland case. The Rotary Club honors them. Presumably, the Rotary Club didn't anonymously honor them. They honored them by name.
Correct.
Three of them came to the proceedings. The plain dealer could have sent a reporter down. I think they actually did get, a picture of somebody. There's nothing that prevents them from taking a picture of the person receiving the honor.
I think you're absolutely right. And in that case, I think that the person who appears
There's nothing that prevents them from sitting down at the precinct and taking a picture of every officer that comes in or goes out.
And that actually goes to another argument of mine, which I don't think nobody's brought it up yet, but I'm not even convinced that these photographs are public records, that they document the business of the city in any way, because if I laid out a picture of all seven of you in front of me, or your headshots in front of me, I don't know what information I could glean from it other than that one person looks like that, one person looks like that. What information about the workings of government would that give me? And the fact that the plain dealer can stand outside a precinct and take a picture of somebody, which actually means that what you're saying is that they can make public, they can make city records themselves. They can duplicate what is otherwise a city record, if we're going to call these a city record. Sort of indicates to me that they're not public records.
Well, I mean, we have the law, and we have, as Justice O'Donnell points out, Division B seems to have this overarching reach, and we have to figure out, does that just wipe out everything or not?
Well,
this all seems to be couched in terms of there are all these things that these police officers have to be afraid of and worry about. Here the Rotary Club is honoring them. The newspaper wants to put their picture in. That's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good thing for the department. It's a good thing for the officers.
Absolutely.
And it would seem to me that those are really the only kinds of pictures that newspapers run. Pictures of DARE officers out talking to kids, things that are just very positive for the particular officer or for the department or for the community. And the flip side of that is the other kind of pictures they run are the ones where some officer has done something very bad. Again, doesn't everyone in the community have an interest in and a right to know that? It's not insignificant whose face is in the newspaper when some officer has done something very bad. It's not the whole department. And that face distinguishes the officer who has done something very bad from all the rest of the hardworking officers who are doing good work every day.
I've wrestled with that notion, Your Honor, and I try to let the documents that are at issue in this case present both angles. It's the photos of the laudable ceremony by the Rotary Club, and then there's the photos of the five officers who the plaintiff traced as abusing overtime. With respect to the Rotary Club photos, you have a private organization like the Rotary Club doing this honoring of these people. The officers who agree to appear for the photo op that the Rotary Club announced and that the plain dealer makes such a big deal about because they got this circular for a photo op, it was a photo op put out by the Rotary Club, not by the City of Cleveland. You got a photo op, you got an officer who says, I will do that. He's waived his opportunity to block his picture in that particular aspect. From standing there on a podium receiving an award from someone and shaking hands and having his picture taken there and having his picture on the paper. But not all the officers will go to those kind of ceremonies because they don't even want to get the press when it's good press. Now, the flip side of that is the overtime one. And I look at the names, I go back and look at the articles, and I see the pictures in whenever there's articles about police officers, and I think, what do those pictures add to this? What do the names add to it? Isn't the point that they uncovered, like, misfeasance by a whole system here of overtime that the taxpayers are responsible for? Or is the point that officer A, B, C, and D were the ones who were abusing overtime the most?
Wouldn't that be precisely the point? Isn't the point that Cleveland has how many police officers? How many do you have?
I think about 1,200.
1,200. And five abuse the system.
Well, those are just the worst offenders. I'm sure they had more on their list. But the point would be that they could still say that there were five. My personal viewpoint when I look in this is, what difference does it make when you name the five as officer, Smith and Jones and whatever. I understand your point, but I try to wrestle with it and say, what do the names actually add or the photographs actually add? And I really haven't come up with very much.
Isn't the key to this, though, that you're talking about one pathway of getting information, and that is through the public records request? We're not talking about anything else. As you mentioned, we're talking about an exemption to the public records law.
That is absolutely correct.
So there are other ways, other means, perhaps, to get information, but what we're talking about here is not necessarily limited to journalists or news organizations. If we write a certain rule, it is going to apply to every single person, not just the news organization.
That is correct. It's going to apply to everyone. And I mean, the Sunshine Laws, we functioned as a society for an awful long time before the Sunshine Laws went into effect. Sunshine Laws were put in were added to our public policy for very good reasons, but it doesn't mean that at certain points along the way the sunshine laws don't need a little bit of adjusting as circumstances change. As life becomes, or as the streets become more threatening to police officers, maybe you do need to protect their information, and people will have to fall back on the ways that they used to fall back on to have their grievances addressed. They might not be able to go to City Hall and file a public records request, but frankly, even in that case, I listened to Mr. Marburger, listened to the arguments from the newspapers saying, how am I going to find out the name of the officer that clubbed me over the head if he doesn't have his badge on and I need to sue him? Well, trust me, if they sent a public records request to the city of Cleveland that says, I need the name of the officer who clubbed me over the head last night, they're not going to get anything. I mean, that's not a public records request. You still have to, there has to be more information in it than that. So they wouldn't be going about trying to find out who it was who had abused them in that manner. They would be filing a complaint against the whole police department, and then they would find out, because the police department would have to figure out who it was that supposedly caused the problem and do it that way. You know what I'm saying? You can't just do an anonymous, you know, I was roughed up by a police officer last night. Here's my public records request. Please respond to it within 10 days. There has to be more specificity than that in general to a public records request.
Counsel, you've argued this in your brief. I'd like to hear your strongest response to the relator's argument with respect to the non-literal versus the literal application of the words in the statute, and if we adopt your view of the statute, that is going to have an impact on other records that would be probably unintended. What's your response to those arguments?
If it has an unintended consequence on other records, I'm not sure that we can all assume that it's unintended as opposed to being the actual intent of the General Assembly when they say exactly what they say. If they, and my time is up, Your Honor, I'd like to
finish your answer.
If the General Assembly said what it said, and if in response to this court's opinion someday down the road saying that the General Assembly meant exactly what it said, if they have to look back and say, oops, you know, that isn't exactly what we intended, it wouldn't be the first time that there's been an interplay between the workings of the General Assembly and the workings of this court. But as written, the language is crystal clear, and I think to assume that
crystal clear, but the relators, you know, in its brief, Cleveland brief, says that you're both really arguing for a non-literal application of the statute. Isn't that true? I mean, the photos are not mentioned in the statute. We have to assume from the statute that a photo identifies a person as an officer of the Cleveland Police Department or the Youngstown Police Department, don't we? So we're really choosing between two non-literal applications. Is that right?
Well, I thought their argument was different than that, but I'll address both of them. I thought their argument was with respect to B, that if it says any record, that we're imposing a non-literal interpretation because we're saying that you can redact the police officer's name, and they're saying the statute says any record, so you could like withhold the whole record than just redacting. But part A leads to redacting also, because part A says, you know, the following is not public record, so you would still produce it all but redact people's names out that way. So part A and B, if non-literal means redacting, then God bless them, I think A and B are both, you know, any reasonable reading of them are both non-literal then. And the other point was I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. What was the second prong of that?
Well, the application, the rule of law for which you argue would have, I think you've already answered, would have implications on other records. Other records, public, that have not been public.
We have wrestled with this in the law department every time we get one of these requests, and we look at the statute, and what do you do? I mean, it says what it says, and until someone tells us otherwise, it says you can't give out documents that identify a person's occupation as a police officer. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Stasis. Ms. Guglielmo.
Good morning. Which is the light that will turn red when I'm done?
Pardon?
Which is the light that will turn red when I'm done?
The red light will turn red.
Yeah.
It'll be quite obvious to you.
Okay. The Plain Dealer and the Vindicator have provided a lot of historical perspective and a lot of sociological types of arguments as to why a police force should not be anonymous. And they've carried this to the extent that they're trying to convince this court that a photograph of a police officer releasing a not releasing a photograph of a police officer to the general public would in some effect be detrimental to society. And one of the issues that I don't think anybody has addressed yet in this case is that it's not up to this court to balance those arguments. The legislature has already done its balancing act in passing this statute and looking at whether at the exposure that the police have in carrying out their police duties and the possible consequences of a person with nefarious intentions getting a hold of their private information versus the public's need to know or the public's wanting to know in this instance. I think this court has made it very clear in prior findings in prior cases that it is up to the legislature to do that balancing. It is not up to this court to do that balancing.
Counsel, could you help us out by explaining how a photo of an individual not in uniform is a record that identifies a person's occupation as a peace officer?
I cannot help you out in that, Your Honor, because both pictures that the city of Youngstown had available to respond to the Vindicator's request were pictures of Officer Giovanni in uniform.
In uniform.
So that is not an issue that I addressed, and if there were pictures of police officers that the city of Cleveland had where they were not in uniform, I didn't know that and am not prepared to argue that that does identify a police officer.
But
occupation as a police officer.
They've already said that wouldn't satisfy them anyway. They want the uniform picture, so.
But, I will point out, however, that neither the plain dealer nor the vindicator have argued here that a photograph does not meet the plain language of the statute that exempts from disclosure any record that identifies a person's occupation as a police officer, firefighter, or EMT. Neither one of them have said a photograph doesn't do that. In fact, they've said a photograph doesn't do that, and there's other records that don't do that, and because of that, you have to interpret this statute in a different manner from what it was intended.
You've used your time, Ms. Guglielmo.
Thank you.
Mr. Geddes, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. A police officer's name and image is not private. It's not personal. We don't have KGB police forces and secret forces here. The suggestion that, we'll just redact the name like we do the personal information isn't true. If I ask for Officer Smith's IAB files, which this court has repeatedly said should be available, they can't give it to me because it would identify him, his occupation as a police officer, if they give me Smith's files. Finally, people do care which police officer is involved. When I represent people at a black wedding, a wedding couple, who were raided by police officers for no reason and physically abused, and they could not identify the officers, they desperately wanted to figure out how to identify them, and I couldn't file a lawsuit because it would have been frivolous till I knew who they are. My last point. Do you think the legislature intended or drafted this statute to nullify every other specific statute, ordinance, and practice which dictates that officers, uniformed officers at least, disclose themselves while at this protect them from their names being known, while at the same time the witnesses and the victims they are supposed to protect, their names can be obtained? Does that make sense that the people trained to protect themselves the best and to protect others should have confidentiality to their names when the victims and the witnesses who have to come forward and mentioned in these reports in IAB files have no such protection. What kind of message does that send? I don't think that's the message the General Assembly is intending nor asking you to enforce.
Thank you, Mr. Geddes. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.